second scripture reading is from Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 11, verse 2, and then verses 17 through 26. So I invite you again to hear the word of the Lord. Paul writes, "I commend you because you remember me in everything and maintain the traditions just as I handed them on to you. Now in the following instructions, I do not commend you, because when you come together, it is not for the better, but for the worse. For to begin with, when you come together as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you, and to some extent I believe it. Indeed, there have to be factions among you, for only so will it become clear who among you are genuine. When you come together, it is not really to eat the Lord's supper. For when the time comes to eat, each of you goes ahead with your own supper, and one goes hungry and another becomes drunk. What, do you not have homes to eat and drink in? Or do you show contempt for the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What should I say to you? Should I commend you? In this matter, I do not commend you. For I received from the Lord what I also handed on to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took a loaf of bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body that is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So a couple of months ago, we just finished worship, and I was standing over at the door greeting people when Lee and Barbara McConnell came up, and they said, "Do you know anything about the person whose name is engraved on the baptismal font?" If you haven't seen it before, it says Clayton French Earl, 1894 to 1897. Well, I didn't know anything about it other than that it was given in memory of a child who was 2 or 3 years old. About an hour later, after worship was over, I got an email from Barbara. She had gone home and done a quick Google search for Clayton French Earl and found a picture of his grave in Laurel Hill Cemetery in Philadelphia. And it said on his gravestone, "Clayton French Earl, son of Catherine and George Earl." So now we had a little bit more to go on there. And we could see on the website that Clayton was born in Germantown on March 10th, 1894, and also died in Germantown on October 15th, 1897, so he was 3. And in the late 1800s, Germantown was a bit of a hike from Devon. You weren't just going to hop in your horse and buggy and come on over to church every Sunday. That was going to be a little bit of a haul. So we weren't sure what their connection was to St. John's. Right? So we had a little bit more information, but we still had a lot of questions. Barbara then reached out to John Sr., our resident historian, and said, "Do you know anything about this family or how the baptismal font came to be dedicated?" And John actually did. He wrote back, "The Earl family lived for a time in a large stone house on Berkeley Road, right across from the church where those new houses were just built a couple of years ago." So they lived right across the street. Eva Knoll notes in her 1983 history of the church that on December 11th, 1900, Mrs. George Earl gave the font in memory of her late child. The Earls lived in Devon from the mid-1880s until 1899, when they moved to a much larger estate in the Newtown Square area. Their son, George Earl III, who would have been Clayton's older brother, later became the governor of Pennsylvania. So John said that since the family left Devon before we became St. John's Presbyterian Church in 1903, they were probably involved with the Devon Chapel, which is what we were before, sometime between its inception in 1893 and the date the font was given in 1900. 3 of the Earl's children died at a very young age, and they're all buried at Laurel Hill Cemetery, while the rest of the family is buried at Church of the Redeemer in Bryn Mawr. So I did a little more digging after hearing from John, and I found that George Earl, Clayton's father, was actually a really big deal in Philadelphia business and politics. He was a lawyer and businessman involved in banks and railroads, ran for mayor of Philadelphia in 1911, won the primary, lost the general election. He married Catherine French on December 12th, 1888, 2 years after he graduated from Harvard. And this is my favorite part. He had been working at an attorney's office for $2.50 a week And once he started making $5, they got married. Had to wait until he was raking in the big bucks. So there is a story behind our baptismal font that we really don't even know. And it made me start thinking, what other stories are there that we don't know about this church? So I walked all around this building and the carriage house one day, looking at all the dedication plaques, some of which you might pass by and not even see every time you're here. This stained glass window that depicts the announcement of Jesus' birth to the shepherds. So it says on the bottom there, "To the glory of God and in loving memory of Ethel Valentine Wilt." Who is that? The church history that Eva Knoll wrote says that in 1925, Mr. and Mrs. Henry C. Wilt presented a beautiful stained glass window in memory of their only daughter, Ethel. But I couldn't find any more information than that. There is a plaque on the back wall next to that other stained glass window that says, "In memory of James S. and Pearl H. Stewart." There is another plaque, like right across from that by the doors, that says, "In loving memory of Elmer C. and Flora A. Bauer," but it's directly above the controls for the ceiling fan, so I have no idea. I don't know what is given in memory of them. Is it the window above the door? Is it the ceiling fans? Did they do that? Could be. There are two brass panels on the door back there that lead into the sanctuary. They're worn, so they're kind of hard to read, but one of them says, "In memory of John 3:16, and then it says, "For God so loved the world," it has the scripture reading. And the other says, "In memory of Matthew 28:19, the Great Commission, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them." And it's given by Charles J. Bustard and Georgia S. Bustard. Who are they? And why did they give the doors or the plaques on the door? Why was that significant to them? There's a plaque on this little podium in the back that says, "In memory of John Barber." Why was that given in memory of him? The conference room down the hall is dedicated to the loving memory of Andrew H. Keene, 1955. I spent a lot of time in that room. I know nothing about Andrew Keene. In the room where the photocopier is, there is a plaque on the wall that says, "The Walter and Irma Clemens Church Library, 1967. Ridgely's office is dedicated in loving memory of William G. Benton, Marilyn's husband. And I actually just found out right before worship started that the reason it's dedicated for him is because he was the Sunday school director or superintendent at the time that he died. And so they dedicated that office to him. The nursery, as a lot of you probably know, was dedicated to Kay Pritchard in 1998 for 52 years of loving service. So in the nursery, with these kids for 52 years. But the plaque has fallen off the door and is sitting on the windowsill in the back. The carriage house, a lot of you were here for this, dedicated in honor of the Reverend Dr. Victor Wilson with gratitude for 20 years of ministry at St. John's from 1992 to 2012. And the big room in the carriage house is dedicated to the glory of God and is named in honor of the Reverend Ernest L. McMillan, beloved and faithful pastor, friend, and spiritual shepherd, and exemplar of the fruits of the Spirit to the St. John's family from 1960 to 1990. The framed stained glass window in the carriage house was given by Marie Contapio and her husband Ralph in memory of their daughter Gemma. The big table in that same room was made out of the doors of St. Paul's Presbyterian Church in St. Paul's, North Carolina, where Victor Wilson's wife, Jane, her parents and grandparents were married. So they walked through these doors as they were going in to be married, and then whether they replaced the doors or the church closed, they took the doors and turned them into a table. All these stories that maybe some of us know something about, but others are being slowly lost to time. This communion tablecloth was brought back from Europe by Martha Bell Schoninger. And it took until like the last moment before worship started of me asking around before someone could confirm that for me. And then Betsy Miller said, "We need to write these things down." Yes. Wait for the sermon. Yes, we do. All these stories that are slowly being lost over time. And I'll be honest with you. I used to think that this wasn't what we should be focusing on. That this didn't matter. That the church is about today and how we're reaching people with the love of Jesus Christ right now. Not what happened 50 or 100 years ago. Churches can become too easily prisoners of their history and get stuck there, preventing them from doing what needs to be done right now. But I've recently come to see the importance of this. I was working on a paper for a doctoral class where I had to talk a little bit about the church's history. And the more that I learned about it, the more I saw how our history helps us understand who we are today. You may have seen these brochures that we put together recently that highlight four key aspects of the life of our church: worship, fellowship, Christian education, and mission. So a few years ago, when the elders were working on updating our mission statement, we identified these as the four core values of our church: worship, fellowship, Christian education, and mission. This is what St. John's is about. If you had to boil us down, that would be at the heart of who we are. Well, as I learned more about the history of the church, I saw these four things running all throughout it. In April of 1892, a group of 10 men from Devon got together to start a Sunday school in the home of J. Lewis Twaddle on Valley Forge Road. They were known as the Devon Sabbath School. We started as a Sunday school. Christian education is at the foundation of who we are. Is it any surprise that it still remains such an important part of the life of this church? A year later, we became the Devon Chapel, and a few years after that, we called a pastor and became the Devon Church. In 1903, we became a Presbyterian church and changed our name to St. John's. As much as I have looked back, I've read through the handwritten trustees' notes of when that decision was made. We can find no explanation of why the name St. John's was picked out. That's just what they chose. But in those early years, the members showed a great concern for the local community. There were a lot of Italian immigrants that had arrived in the area, and they were working as gardeners on the large estates that were around here, or as workers in the local quarries. And until those Italian immigrants were able to acquire their own church in Stratford, St. John's let them use our building for worship on Saturday nights. We recognized the importance of worship, not just for ourselves, but for others. The women of the church organized a women's society in 1903 specifically to help with the Italian community. They visited families and handed out Bibles and tracts. The church also reached out to workers on the railroad and boys playing baseball on Sundays. Mission, engaging the community around us, has been a part of who we are since our very beginning. Is it any wonder that it remains such a big part of the life of this church that we give 25% of our budget every single year to ministries outside the life of this church? There is a sense in which we don't just decide today who we are and what we're going to be about. There are certain things that are ingrained in our very DNA as a church. Things that we have been about since our inception: worship, fellowship, Christian education, and mission. This is who we are, and this is why we're here. And when we look back at our history, we see these things stamped on the life of our church at every turn. It's like William Faulkner wrote, "The past is never dead. It's not even past." This is our story. It shows who we are and what is important to us. But if we don't know these stories, or if we forget them, then we lose sight of who we are and what we're about as a church. This is what Moses is saying to the people of Israel in our reading from Deuteronomy. He's giving them again, as Nancy said, this law that God is commanding them to follow. And he says, as you prepare to enter this land that God is giving you, do not forget where you came from. You're about to walk into this new future, but don't forget what is behind you. Do not forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Teach these stories and these laws to your children. Talk about them when you're at home and when you're away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your hand. Fix them as an emblem on your forehead. Write them on the doorposts of your home. Keep them present in your life so that when your children come to you and say, what does this mean and why do we do this? You'll be able to tell them and draw them into the living story of God. Moses is handing on to them this story of faith. And he's calling them to hand it on to their children. And this story has been handed on across the millennia until it has been handed on to us. It's like Moses says to the people, you're about to enter into a land with fine, large cities that you did not build. Houses filled with all sorts of goods that you did not fill. Hewn cisterns, wells that you did not hew. Vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. We are recipients of a faith that we did not create. It has a long history before us. We sing hymns and pray prayers that we did not write. We worship in a building that we did not build. A church has been handed on to us that we did not plant. We have been given a faith by our parents and grandparents and Sunday school teachers and pastors and all these other people who sit around us. And we are called to care for it in such a way that it can continue to live and others can be drawn in to the living story of God. It's like Paul says to the Corinthians, I have received from the Lord what I also handed on to you. And he starts off this section by saying, I commend you because you maintain the traditions as I handed them on to you. You're remembering and doing these things that I taught you. Good job. But then he says, in the following instructions, I do not commend you because you're doing these things that are not in keeping with what I taught you. And he's specifically talking about communion. He says to them, you've forgotten who you are and what you're about and why you celebrate this meal. It's not so you can eat your fill and get drunk on the wine, as some were doing, while other members of the church go hungry. When you celebrate this meal, he says, the way Christ taught his disciples and the way they taught me and the way I taught you, then you will be remembering Christ and living in his story. Next Sunday is Consecration Sunday, when we make our promises for how we will support the life of the church in the coming year. And so this is always the Sunday when we do the stewardship sermon, right? This is we talk about stewardship the week before we make these promises so that we can have time to reflect on what it means and on what God is calling us to do. And people usually think about stewardship as being about money. That's how a lot of churches talk about stewardship. When they say stewardship, they really mean money. But we don't just talk about stewardship one Sunday a year. We talk about it every single Sunday. Because stewardship is not just about money. It is about everything we do with everything we have. How we care for all the things that God has given to us and entrusted us with. Yes, money, but also our time, how we use that in a way that honors and glorifies God. Our abilities and talents, how we use them in a way that honor and glorify God. This planet and its resources, how we use them in ways that honor and glorify God. Our relationships, how we nurture our relationships in ways that honor and glorify God. The forgiveness and the love that God has given to us. How do we nurture them and care for them and share them with others? Stewardship is about everything we do with everything that we have been given, even the church. Because we did not create this. It has been given to us, entrusted to our care for just a little while. We are called by God to be stewards, caretakers of the church and the faith that has been handed on to us by those who came before us, so that we can hand it on to others, so that they might know the goodness and love of God as we have come to know it. We have to take our history and our traditions and our stories and remember them, while also giving them fresh new expressions, so that God can continue to minister to the community and the people around us in new ways through us. What will this church look like 20 years from now? Those are the decisions that we're making today. As we prepare to consecrate our gifts to God next Sunday, our question cannot simply be, how will this benefit me right now? How can I give to build up this church so that I can get what I need out of it? We have to ask, how can I take what I have received from the Lord and hand it on to others? Our time, our talents, our money, the love and forgiveness that we have been given, our church and our faith, all the blessings that we have known. How will we share them in such a way that others can be drawn in to the living story of God? How is God calling us to do that?